right in front of my car. I've lost a debit card. I got convinced to spend large sums of money on alcohol I didn't want. I didn't have a bed for multiple nights and ruined my back sleeping on an air mattress on the ground that I hadn't put together properly, so midway through the night it deflated and I was sleeping on the floor. And I've frozen to death. Welcome to Canberra.
You deserved all of it.
10 out of 10, best vacation location ever. I drove around Parliament House today in a loop. It wasn't that impressive.
Did you meet Mr. Malcolm?
I didn't meet anyone. I've met a single politician. I was making jokes about how I was going to play Pokemon Go with politicians. I haven't got a single one.
That's so upsetting.
Like, I'm walking around with tennis balls ready to throw them at them, and none of them are turning up.
We'll play with them.
Welcome to the Optional Extra Podcast. I'm Brian. I've been moved all the way to Canberra. It's known as the small town capital of Australia. Joining me all the way from the other coast of the country is Mitchell.
Australia.
That implies I'm on a coast, which I'm not. I don't even have a beach.
You're landlocked.
I know.
Canberra's landlocked.
Someone who does have access to a beach, but I'm willing to admit is not going to use it, is Russell.
Hey, Melbourne.
Stop rubbing it in.
All across Australia. All across the country now.
Australia-wide, this is 774 Talkback Discussion Radio. Thank you for joining me, gentlemen. Now, in the news lately, those children have been talking about that Star Wars, I haven't seen it since the 70s, but I'm led to understand they're making new films now. We've got a caller on the line to discuss it further. Mr. Colum, you're on the air.
Yes, I'm on the air. I'm live, am I?
Very much so.
Please do continue.
Children.
I do believe that there was some Star Wars news this week. We got news of the return of Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Return of a Jedi.
We haven't got a trailer, have we? We've just got news.
This one was literally just basically we're going to be making an Obi-Wan movie.
By the way, Obi-Wan movie, we're making it. That's all that was.
So we've got a Han Solo movie that's in production.
Han Solo movie. See what I did there?
We got a Boba Fett movie that was teased for a while, but I think that's stuck in development hell currently. And now we have
fallen into a Sarlacc.
Oh, you're full of them today. So
I really am, aren't I?
Based off that track record, what do we think? Because sadly I hear that news and my first reaction isn't excitement or positivity.
I just want Ewan McGregor to be Obi-Wan again, because that was the best part of the prequels.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Where do we think they're actually going to fit it in?
Well, they've got the Rebels TV show, and that's kind of already filling in a certain time period, and Obi-Wan does appear in that, so I'm guessing it's before then? Rebels.
Yeah, during the fall of the Jedi. Three.
Yeah.
So, like, when... But I mean, that's still him chilling on Tatooine, though.
Yeah, like, he's...
Yeah.
I know in the old Legends canon, he does leave Tatooine for a few different things, but it's going to be kind of shoehorning it in there.
Yeah.
And they're not going to go back to like pre-episode one because he's just a Padawan. No, it wouldn't work.
That
would just be Anakin's story again, but without a dark ending.
Not really a happy ending.
And he doesn't go dark, yeah.
And Clone Wars gave him so much development. Like, they're not really going to do anything within the prequel trilogy because of that. So where do they go?
I guess it has to be just straight after 3 before 4. Because, I mean, obviously he dies in 4, so you have to...
Spoilers!
You have to take some leeway where you can probably just, like, retcon it into that, Obi-Wan went here and here and he ended back on Tatooine after doing this. Which is probably what it'll have to be.
I think to make a compelling movie, they have to do two things. They either have to do that, or they have to Logan it, and basically make it like a super gritty like Tatooine movie, which Disney won't do.
God, no. Not with Obi-Wan Kenobi.
I would quite like, in that vein, to see a movie of Obi-Wan trying to track down another Jedi, and like half the time when he turns up, they're already dead. Like, I actually want to see that, like, really dark, gritty. Not gritty for the sake of it.
but like, just, it's a really, really terrible time of a war. Let's make a war film.
Oh, it's not really a war. It's post-war. It's just the hunt down of survivors.
Yeah, okay. It's a slaughter more than a war.
Massacre. Slaughter.
You got lots assassination. Of kind
of double kill.
But that'd be quite interesting, and then they could piece together, because didn't Rebels change the canon on what happened with the clone troopers? Because originally it was just mental training that said they'd turn on 66, and now it's actually a physical chip in the head.
An inhibitor chip, yeah.
Yeah, so it'd be interesting for them to actually flesh that out a little bit.
Mm, yeah, the Clone Wars really did add to the whole, and it is canon, so it's pretty cool to see them actually taking it seriously from that.
I don't know if I like the use of the chip, though, because it used to be interesting that some of them, like, thought enough for themselves to reject it, whereas now it's like the only reason anyone rejected it is because they happened to realize they had a chip.
That's true, I guess, but it kind of makes it more understandable to, like, make it seem more real that they're not just mentally trained. They didn't just all of a sudden go, yep, we've got to kill all the Jedi.
It's true.
Like, that switched him onto it. I mean, as much as I like both the way it happened, it's just, yeah.
I can't imagine
the chip's easier as a story mechanic to just, like, write it out. It's like, oh, there's a chip in their brain. They destroy the chip. They weren't affected, kind of thing.
And I can imagine a scene where, if we're going down that road, where he, like, just slices the right point of the scalp to remove the chip. Like, it'd be corny as all hell, but I'm like, lightsaber lobotomy, let's do this.
Obi-Wan saves the clones with a little old-fashioned lobotomy. With a lightsaber.
But yeah, it's actually just Dr. Obi. It's Dr. Obi-Wan. He just goes around lobotomizing all these clone troopers.
There's like a TV series.
I heard you had cataracts.
Now I can't see.
But I mean, again, like Force Awakens, no one really thought. Well, sorry, everyone was hyped to hell for it, but no one knew what they were going to do with it, and they nailed it. And then Rogue One, when they announced it, were like, "Well, how the hell's that going to fit in?" And they nailed it. So if they pull like a Rogue One, where they just go, it starts at this point of that movie and finishes at the start of this movie, it could work fine.
Yeah, I guess this is tricky putting Obi-Wan into it, because everything we know that did happen before is that he goes to Tatooine, watches Luke. That's not a movie. That's boring.
And it's also similar to the problem Clone Wars have, and that is because it's set during a time period where certain characters never meet each other. Like, Obi-Wan can't meet Han Solo. Like, it can't happen. They have that inherent problem where they have to... characters you might think meet can't meet because of they literally meet later. So the question is, what does Obi-Wan do that isn't big enough to actually make people realize he's alive or exist, but still have the rebels know that he exists, kind of thing?
It's true.
Tricky. It's like, I'll be surprised to see what they do. Just Obi-Wan chilling out in the desert, the movie.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't mind, yeah, literally the Logan movie, where it's like low budget as heck. It's not a super Disney 1 million, you know, heaps of money spent on it kind of thing. It's just low-key Obi-Wan doing some shit in the desert, and it's just like a real personal story for like his realization of all the shit that's happened to him with Anakin becoming Darth Vader and stuff like that.
That would be actually quite just good. It's not what they'll
Obi-Wan's
make.
Memoirs.
But yeah, Disney wouldn't do it.
No way. No way in hell. They want to make big money out of this movie.
Yeah.
So that's
they want to market. They want to market the shit out of it. And to do that, you need to go to other planets to show more alien creatures to make more toys.
Yeah, that's the point.
All right, so we normally play a game right about now and here. New thing we're doing. If you lose the game, you instead of getting points to the winner, because you don't reward winners, you punish losers. So whoever loses this game today is going to need to give us their best possible rendition of the Braveheart Take Our Lives, Not Our Freedom speech. I want full, like I imagine you wearing the face paint. It's going to be brilliant.
What about a kilt?
Oh, I want to... I don't want to imagine either of you in a kilt, but... Anyway, with all due respects to the Scottish, I don't really want to see anyone in kilts. So I'm going to read off this list to you. Two movies. This is adjusted with inflation. I want you guys to tell me which one sold more tickets, all right?
Okay.
Yep.
Return of the Jedi or Phantom Menace?
Phantom Menace.
Return of the Jedi.
Score one to Mitch. It's actually Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, by
$30 million.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, it's actually not even a contest. All right.
Damn.
It's pretty big.
No contest.
So Return of the Jedi was the second... Oh, sorry. Empire is the second best-selling Star Wars movie. All right. Would it be The Avengers or The Lion King? This is Marvel's The Avengers and The Lion King.
I'll go The Lion King if...
Mitch has gone Lion King. Russell's gone Avengers.
It's Sabenya.
Yeah, Lion King outsold it by a mile. You're talking number 19 versus number 29.
Yeah.
All right, Mitch, we're going to do best of five, so you can lock it out right now, okay?
Yep.
Would it be The Dark Knight Rises or Toy Story 3? The movie that came off a lot of hype over its predecessor, or the movie that came off a decade of hype off its predecessor?
Look, yeah, I got to lock in Batman. I mean, if there's an option, I have to pick it.
It's Toy Story.
Mitch locks out the game there and then. No contest.
I just feel like it's probably Toy Story 2.
Absolutely no contest. All right.
Game, set, match.
What were the other two?
Let's do the other ones anyway.
Yeah, let's do the other ones. All right. So let's do a couple of new movies. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 or 2001 A Space Odyssey? Do you think Volume 2 has got further than Space Odyssey already?
Okay, 2001 Space Odyssey.
I'll go Guardians. Space Odyssey is a bit of a weird movie.
Russell is terrible at this game. It's Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. 389 million versus 385.
I just really wanted to read the Braveheart speech.
It's just so keen. All right, we'll do one last one just to prove a point. Iron Man 2 or Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice?
I got it once again for the exact same reason. Got a lock in Batman. So Batman.
It's probably Batman, but I'm going Iron Man 2.
It's Iron Man 2. Iron Man 2 took $349 million. Batman v Superman only took $340. There's $9 million more in one of the worst Marvel films.
Yeah, that's surprising.
Incidentally, though, Suicide Squad is number 199. Like, it got up there.
Ugh.
So anyway, Russell, be rehearsing that speech right about now. Alright, so we'll come back to Russell's dramatic reading later on, because he just got absolutely slaughtered.
Defeated.
As I said, I just really wanted to read the Braveheart speech. That's all it was.
Yeah, totally.
Fatality.
So, earlier in the week, I picked up PlayerUnknown Battlegrounds, because enough people had told me I needed to play this game that I decided to play it. And sat there on a bed in a hotel room, trying to not die on an island. And it turns out, I'm very good at the game if I don't interact with anyone through the entire thing and get killed by the closing map. I'm just terrible if you actually give me a gun. So
I've been killed by being blown up by missiles, so...
Where'd they get a missile?
The map blows you up. I actually did kill someone in that game. Lachlan was distracting them and got shot, at least my brother, and... I punched them to death with my bare fists.
I just picked up an AK, thought I was golden, ran up to a guy, pulled the trigger, didn't realize it was on single shot. So I missed, and he just turned around and headshotted me, and I was like, okay, that's fair.
Bang. Oh.
Shit. Hi. But it's interesting, because when I picked it up, and I was explaining to my brother, like, what I was doing, and he's going, wait, so do you own the game when the full game comes out? Like, if it updates, do you buy it again? Can you give it back? What's the rules on this? And it made me realize that not everyone's quite up to date with how early access works. But this kickstarted the debate again of whether early access is a good thing or not, both for the consumer and for the industry in general. Because there's cases that have become very famous now, with legal battles and everything over the way that companies have handled it. But on the other hand, there are games like this one, for example, that have come out, had great critical reception, continually being updated, and will presumably go to a full release sometime soon. I don't know when it is. But I think they pushed it back, was the last news piece I read.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. So, Mitch, where do you fall on early access? Do you buy a lot of early access games, or do you largely avoid it?
I try not to anymore. I used to, I think. I bought Rust back in the day, which is still being updated, which is cool, but these days I probably won't. I mean, as much as I bought PlayerUnknown Battlegrounds, but apart from that,
I didn't know Rust was it in early access.
It's still in early access, actually, because they're completely updating it. But yeah, okay. I don't normally buy them, so I'm against.
So why don't you buy them? Build the case.
Because of such games as The Stomping Lands, Brian. For those who don't know about The Stomping Lands, that was an early access game that got shut down and they never got their money back. Someone in my family had bought that game and is pretty salty about it. So I do hear about that a fair bit.
How much was it?
$29.99.
American.
And the game was pretty much abandoned. Yep, USD. It's pretty much
and
abandoned.
So it's not playable now, the servers are gone kind of situation?
It's gone. Game's unplayable. Servers are gone.
And that's part of the Steam policy, is that it was played for X number of hours, so the refund is not available?
This is pre-refunds, so none of it was applicable. So you couldn't get anything back for that one. That one was... Yeah, so there's examples of that happening with early access. That isn't the most common, but it is an occurrence.
So it is a bit of a gamble in that regard, and I think everyone has to admit that that is true. I think this is one of
those... It's like kickstarting something.
Well, exactly. And it's one of those systems where, yeah, people will abuse it, and people will screw up, and... I mean, realistically, in that situation, they should be giving people their money back. But I think it's one of those systems where there's, even if only a few really good things come out of it, it's almost justification of it in itself. A lot of the things that are on there that are garbage, you can tell they're garbage.
Yeah, you can. That's the point. Like, well, we can talk about early access games that are still in early access and have been there for a very long time and don't look like they're ever going to be completed.
And I admit that is less defendable, but it's interesting because in some ways they're just using that as a legal defense of going, we're a small team, we don't know when we're going to be able to finish this game, but we know that we need the income now, and we know that the community would actually like to help build it. So in Rust, for example, that game's whole community... DayZ. That entire community built around helping them work out what the game needs. Like, I don't think that game, if they built it without early access and then released it, would be anything remotely as popular as it is now.
It's a way of getting like free QA. Like, it's basically having all these users who are playing the game anyway and paying them almost for it, and they're not hiring anyone professional, I guess, to test it, bug test it. They're just
asking people to pay to test it.
But most importantly, it's not only are they getting the QA, but they're getting the feedback of things they wouldn't have even thought of that might annoy a user.
And for some of them, they're getting funding.
Oh, are they?
Well, that's how some of them fund the game.
Oh, sorry, in that regard, yeah. Sorry, I thought you meant external funding.
I would say DayZ is a different case because it's bought by Bohemia Interactive, who obviously own Armor. So they don't really, like, need the money. They probably have QA. So it kind of makes you wonder why it's taking so long.
I don't know. Sometimes I guess it's like maybe the idea isn't fleshed out. Like, it's almost like, is early access a good way for games to just like ease people in? Because would No Man's Sky be a better game if it entered early access before it came out officially?
Probably.
Forgiven it more? Yeah.
I think so. But the problem with early access is games that release into that, let's just think, what's the Happy Few, for instance, has lost so much of its like hype because of early access, because people have these expectations and they're like, oh, it's not quite complete. So like, I think there's an issue with E3 showing off games in early access, which I think they should not do.
And I think early access only works for multiplayer centric games. Was we happy for you multiplayer?
I don't think it is.
Yeah, so I don't understand why that launched into early access outside of needing funding, but if they could get on the E3 floor, you would assume they've got money behind them.
Well, they got Microsoft behind it.
Yeah.
Backing them under the ID at Xbox program.
So in that case, I find it hard to work out, because I will defend this until the cows come home for securing multiplayer games and fleshing that out, because trying to work out balance and everything takes a lot of effort, and it's good to see small studios still finding a way to get in there. In those situations, when a large company is using it, I find it harder to defend the idea.
Well, sometimes large companies use it too as basically a bargaining chip for their pre-order bonus, and they just go pre-order and you get early access. So Destiny, it is used for sinister reasons. Yeah.
The pre-order for early access, though, is basically the same system that non-large companies, which would be called small companies, are using anyway. It's just a little bit more transparent.
But they're using it as I said, a QA system. Like, they go, we can't afford to hire all these people to test everything, and the users are happy to do it for us, so why not just release it early? The problem is they enter a never-ending cycle of 3 years or 4 years, however long it takes, of being in an early access stage, and people go, is this game out or not? I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's...
I think, personally, early access developers really need to make a timeline that is actually, that works. There's a few games that actually have released under early access that are currently, like, for one, Slime Rancher at the moment has got increased hype because of Games with Gold.
And the Ark Survival Evolved, that's coming out soon, yeah?
That's coming out, yeah. But the funny thing with that is, it was early access. People complaining about the price change, because it's gone to AAA, like, full-price game.
Right.
And they actually had that written down. So,
yeah, that's...
So if you're in early access in that case, do you still get the full game when it comes out?
I think early access is a way to lure people. Well, not lure people. It's kind of a... get into my van. It's basically they cut the price down. Like, initially, to try and go, like, if you get into early access, it's cheaper now. So, try and get your money that way. It's like a mix of a dark tool as well as something positive for certain people as well.
Well, it's letting the user gamble. They're going, I might get a really good game for a cheap price, or I might get a really average game that was probably only worth the cost of admission.
And also, some people really like just getting hands on broken things and going, oh, this isn't working, and I want to tell the developer how to make it better. Like, contributing to the community of that game, a lot of people definitely like that.
Which is fair enough. It's early access as a thing is cool, that we can test out all these games before they're ready and have our input matter most of the time. Not all of the developers are going to listen to you, and there's a lot of cases of users being banned in their forums and stuff because people, they don't want to hear their ideas and stuff, which is just also, it's just bad use of early access. Early access should be about seeing what people think about your game and finding what's wrong with your game.
So basically, if we use early access correctly, it's good. Otherwise, it's bad, yeah?
Effectively. I guess it goes with a lot of things, but...
So here's the real debate then. How do you implement quality assurance on early access games? That's really what we're talking about now.
That is what we're pretty much talking about, yeah. The factual issue.
Because, like,
Valve will do nothing about.
Well, it's not even just Valve, but...
True,
so
like,
when you're saying
now and...
When you're saying a large company has early access as a pre-order and that's inherently bad, you're like, well, you know, for one, you actually probably are getting a reasonable to high quality.
Well,
like, I mean, most of the time they say beta, it's fully done.
Yeah,
or, like, when they say this is the alpha test, it's like, bullshit.
Despite
like,
the fact
had
they
a beta
could... Sorry.
A week before it came out. Like, you could play the on a beta.
So did, like, Overwatch and stuff. Whereas, like, a week before it came out, there was, like, a beta or whatever. It was like, well, this is just a demo.
Effectively. Yeah. I think there's just, like, I think Overwatch is advertised more as, like, early. Get to, like, a free weekend or something, more so than
yeah,
a beta.
It might have been, free early weekend or something like that.
Which is also bullshit, but that's not what we're talking about.
No. But it kind of is, because that's how larger companies use it. And it's functional and it works, despite people's hatred of the whole pre-order idea, which I'm inclined to believe is a little bit of a witch hunt. Like, some parts of that work quite well. So then if you scale it back, what do you do? If someone's built, like, the shell of a game and they want to sell it for $3, but that shell of a game is actually trash, like, do you reject them straight up from being on whatever marketplace it is?
Can we get Jim Sterling as a guest to discuss?
that's kind of it, right? But I don't think even he's necessarily against people trying to make something and selling it cheap. He's against people stealing assets or trying to sell something broken for a large sum of money. So what there should be set, like, everything should be, say, just for argument's sake, $5. Like, that's the ceiling. And I think that solves most of the problem.
To, like, quality assure this, you need, like, probably some big document of, you need more concrete plans of this is how long it's going to take, and you need to kind of stick to it, or there are punishments in place, I guess, for...
So, like, a proper contract where you have to give the money back if you fail after an X amount of time.
Yeah, so it should be... there's so many issues with that as well. There's, like, so many issues with the current system. Every other system you implement could be flawed as well. It's just, really, what can you do to fix early games? They're going to be in a state you're not really... a state you need to know before early access is that it's obviously not done.
And you know, actually, I just thought, you know what the actual answer is? 20-minute demo. Just mandatory 20-minute demo.
Well, so like, can see. I think you could do the demo thing as well as having like them have to kind of stick to a timeline as well.
Yeah.
Which probably might be a solution.
I mean, we've forgotten to have a debate, but I think we just solved a problem. Although,
yeah, I think that's what we do here. We solve problems.
No way that can be implemented from a legal standpoint, and I think it's hard to force a demo. But still, you know, we live in a little glass bubble, so totally nailed it.
All hail the bubble. All hail the bubble. Nailed it. The glorious bubble.
Nailed it.
If you'd like any other problems fixed, please give us a ring.
If you need help, and you can find them.
Who you got to call? Optional extra.
And with that, I think we can roll on out of this. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Let's just advertise all the other stuff we have going on. So, Whispers of Winter, that's... what episode are we up to now, guys?
We have...
6 is coming, and then 7 is the final episode.
So, there you go. Yeah. So, if you need to catch up on all your Game of Thrones-based commentary, you can go and listen to that. I don't know much about the games or the thrones. I assume you move the thrones on the board and that's what it's about, but I'm not sure.
We also the phrase, steal the win and everyone gets pissed off.
We also have these two working on the two-player podcast, which is our more video-centric, all the video game news and everything you need to know from that week. Listen to them. That's coming out on Mondays. Have we got anything else you want to plug real quick?
I've got a Sonic Mania review coming out very soon. Like, should be sometime. Oh, maybe before this podcast even goes out.
Yeah, it will be.
Gotta go fast. You're too slow.
So you can go and check that out on optional-extra.com. You can also see all this stuff coming up in your Facebook feed if you like us or whatever it is on Facebook. And you can also see video versions of the reviews on our YouTube channel. And I do believe we have a Twitter, but it's relatively inactive. But, you know, listen to that as well. And if you see a smoke signal off in the distance that has our logo in it, sort of head towards it and you'll find content there.
Do you have, like, a Batman-like light system?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The optional extra signal. And you get there and there's just these dodgy-looking USBs with copies of the podcast on them. And with that, I've been Brian, locked all the way over here in Canberra. Next week, we'll have a slightly better setup where I'm not doing this through my phone. But, you know, maybe no one will have noticed. Thank you to you two joining me. And Russell, now, if you would like, please read to us, as multiple characters, the climactic scene of Braveheart.
And if this is your army, why does it go? We didn't come here to fight for them. Dying in your beds many years from now, you'd be willing to trade all that from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom!